This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Oh, it's Rack Addicts time once again. Episode 94. Welcome. Thank you for tuning in to the podcast about music and technology and Chuzik Mechnology. Wait, did I spoonerize that right? Chuzik Mechnology. Yeah, I got it right. Wasn't even thinking about it. Amazing. My name's Ben, and Pete is with me here as well. And we're going to talk about some stuff and things, and maybe some things and then some stuff in no particular order. But Pete, what have you been up to this week? I mean, last week we had a bit of a performance at the ModCaf.
Bit of a noodle in front of the general public.
In the real world again.
Yeah, that was I thought it was quite inspiring to actually be doing it. I can't comment on the actual performance.
Well, it was great. Thoroughly enjoyable from my perspective, and I hope from the rest of the audience as well. How did you find it?
It was a bit frustrating. I had my cable problems at the beginning. That was a bit...
I think that might be due to that floating ring thing that I've never understood to do with mono jack cables and stuff.
Are they balanced inputs on those DI boxes that they have there?
I don't know. I don't like their DI boxes. They confuse me.
Purchased those cables from Amazon, and there was a bit of a Frankenstein. So I had a 3.5mm jack going to a 1/4 inch or 6.3mm female jack. And then from there, a 1/4 inch or 6.3mm jack to jack, then going into the DI boxes. And I was just getting static and crackly stuff.
You need a
stuff.
Proper output module, I reckon.
Yeah, well...
Or just use the headphone out.
Yeah, well, eventually Akira had a cable or a pair of cables that we used and they were fine.
Got there in
so
the end.
So I've got to get something similar to those for anything in the future if I use that particular mixer.
Yes, indeed. Before we move on, I do have a little snippet for our audience, if you'll let me play it.
Okay, what if you must.
I must. Snippeted. Yep. We've had quite a good run of performances straddling the ethereal and terrifying kind of boundary. Those are always quite fun. I like those. They take you on a journey.
Well, hopefully there was nothing too terrifying. I mean, it was one of those ones where as you sort of got it going and worked it, it did start improving as we went. So I was...
Let's jump towards the end because it went places. I can find the places that I meant. There we go. Certainly dragging some of the creepier stuff out of your monsoon.
Yes. I mean, I got over the technical issues quite quickly because it was like a fresh start, quick apology and move on. So I wasn't grimaced by sort of being mortified all the way through the performance as you would possibly be if, you know, something goes wrong and you have that kind of, oh my God, what's happening?
Yeah. Well, the good thing is it's not such a high pressure performance environment because we encourage the experimentation and the strange setups, and also explaining what you're doing and learning along the way.
Yes.
That's what we like.
It's general feeling of that in the room, so it's not too perturbing.
It's always good fun. I'm glad the regulars all made you welcome.
But other than that, I've got over my soul-searching, wound-licking experience of the Polybrute. So
yes.
I thought, especially after the performance and the potentiality that you would like me to come back and do something else.
Ooh, stay tuned for next episode.
So I purchased something for myself, a special something.
Oh, okay, give me clues.
Well, I don't have to give you a clue. There's a box just down by your rucksack, a little white box.
Okay,
there.
Well, all I can see is a white box, so I'm still going to try and guess. I think you've gone 1010 music.
No.
Oh. Is it something you think will be directly useful for said mysterious project?
Yes.
Is it a module?
Yes.
Okay. It's not going to be a reverb?
No.
Because that would be entirely pointless given the project. Spoilers-ish. It's not going to be drums, I don't think.
No.
Because that would be equally unadvisable. No, I've got no idea. Here we go. It's quite a large box for a module.
Oh my.
It says Black Corporation on it. Let me lift the lid. You bought a Deckard's voice.
Yes.
May I take a look under the
wrappings? Of course,
under the wrappings?
Of course. Ooh.
I don't know why it seems bigger than I expected, even though I...
It is quite... well, it's a complete width. Voice, isn't it? It's a complete synth.
Oh, wow. That is a beautiful thing. Okay, so we've got one PCB for the controls and another for the main gubbins, and then they've got another stack of PCB material on the back to kind of protect things.
Quite like
that.
Look
fancy. That's really cool. I haven't seen that before. That's nice. That's a good choice. So, given what you might be attempting to accomplish in such a project, were you thinking this might be the sort of the only sound source?
I don't know yet. I haven't even plugged it in. It only arrived today.
Ah, fair enough. I was going to say, how could you resist?
Well, I tend to find I'm quite patient these days. I can wait for things. Having waited quite a few times, up to 6 months for a synth.
Oh, of course, yeah. And then it turning out kind of badly. But, yeah, I mean, was this just in stock somewhere and you went for it? Because we've definitely mentioned it before.
Yeah, no, I've been toying with it and then for some reason it just occurred to me that it might be an interesting thing to build into a system and put through reverbs and modulate a lot.
Definitely. For our listeners that aren't familiar, Deckard's voice is a single piece of the 8-voice CS80 clone that Black Corporation make called Deckard's Dream, and it sounds juicy. I think there is a DivKid video on it, isn't there?
There's quite a few. I've been spending my time over the weekend watching quite a few videos in respect to the noise. A lot of people have described it as a real classic 1970s, possibly early 80s sound, but it's one that lends itself to really long notes.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll do the short stuff, and it's also described as having really good bottom and top end.
Perfect.
Which is not always the case. But I quite like the fact that it's a complete voice, and so it's not a case of just being an oscillator and then I've got to stack all sorts of other bits and bobs. It's pretty much self-contained other than effects.
I'm excited to hear it at some point.
So, I mean, last week you were saying if you could come again in November, so possibly...
If you can put something together for that particular date, I think it's the 10th, that'd be brilliant. Why not?
So that's what the intention is.
Awesome. Well, it's going to be similar format. I think we might encourage slightly longer performances, but we'd still like a lot of basically what you did again, explaining the thing, using the thing, talking about the thing. That's what we like.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of that.
Excellent. I'm excited to hear it. Well, I've already spoken about the Modular Cafe once, but we are fortunate enough to have quite a masterclass. I don't think Akira would be that happy, me calling it a masterclass, because they're a very humble person, but extraordinarily talented. So this was an absolute delight, and I am sorry that Simon, our resident Gabba enthusiast, wasn't there to hear it. But this was a demo of maybe the less thought about aspects of the Make Noise shared system and some really good tips and tricks and hacks available to only those who come to the ModCaf. But it was amazing. A couple of jams in the demonstration, and the second one took everybody by surprise because it just became amazing techno. And I said to Akira afterwards, I don't know why, for some reason I had it in my head that the shared system was just, I mean, what can it really do? It's only a small system, right? It's amazing. Listen to this. Listen to a bit of this. And why not a bit of this? Or this? And also maybe some of this. Oh. It went places. It was amazing. Did you enjoy it as well?
Yes, it was a very technical presentation, which I wasn't quite expecting how in-depth it was in that respect, in the mechanics of what was going on. They were definitely demonstrating a really in-depth understanding of exactly that type of thing. I'm more of a twiddle and see what comes out.
Yeah.
I don't really analyse, oh, this waveform's doing this, and when it rises to this level, this is happening to the waveform, and if you do this, this is how the waveform changes and all that sort of thing.
Definitely. Well, from someone that knows the DX7 very well, not surprising. The level of mastery. I'll use that word again. Mastery. The master of the
shared system. I didn't ask about whether that, because it was a, I mean, it's a shared system. It's a sort of make noise shared system, but is it something that Akira's put together, or was it purchased as a chunk?
I think it might have been a chunk at one point, and then certain bits changed around. I'm not entirely sure. There's been quite a lot of changing in that case, but I don't know how it originally came to be.
But that is a make noise case.
Make noise case with the CV bus in it, and I think it is the classic selection of modules from the old one compared to the black and gold that you can get currently.
There's a selection of black and gold and silver faced units in there.
Yeah, the original one was black and gold because of Rene pressure points. There has been a silver woggle bug, but you know, the current ones, I think, black. But yeah, Rene and pressure points, I'm pretty sure, have only ever been black.
And the ones you see advertised on the web these days are all black and gold.
Yeah, they're just the new ones. But yeah, so there's like the Phonogene instead of the Morphogene. And I think Akira had the Mysteron in there, which I don't know if that is... I don't think that's currently in there, and I'm not sure if that's a standard from the old version. We should have asked.
And I always knew that they liked their West Coast, but I didn't realise how West Coast it actually was.
Yeah, and actually one of the tips that I haven't played because it was more part of the lecture-styly bit was actually that Akira had been talking to one of our other regulars, Nigel, and Nigel had asked, but what if you want to do some acid, or what if you want that East Coast Moogie sound? There were some hacks for that as well.
Yes.
And it did get a bit 303, which was very surprising.
Well, they do filters, but they're not that exciting. Well, certainly, I've got is it an MMF?
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got one, and it's okay, but it's not particularly exciting or revolutionary.
Yeah. I think the Q-Pass is the only other filter that they do. Oh, they've got low-pass gates, obviously, but proper filters, Q-Pass is the only other one, and that's not normal by any stretch.
Yeah, I've always suspected that. I mean, she was getting a lot out of the twin oscillator.
DPO, yeah, the heart of the whole deal. It was cool.
I really have to pick their brains.
Yeah, get some of the tips and tricks.
Yeah.
Maybe you should, with your make noise row, you could probably extract an almost shared system or something, couldn't you?
I pretty much got most of those modules apart from the actual connection strip in the middle. I'm not sure what I haven't got. I mean, the Phonogene or Morphogene, that's what I haven't got.
Right, right.
But I'm seriously considering one of those anyway.
Yeah, no, Morphogene was quite high on my list when I was at one point considering, ooh, something granulary, recordery, sampley.
Is there a mimeophone in there at all?
That's the delay, isn't it? No, because that's a more modern one. That might feature in the current tape and microsound music machine as well. So mimeophone is definitely in the tape and microsound music machine. Shared system, the current, the black and gold shared system, no. So let me get in here, get a better picture. I don't like Make Noise's website one bit. Maths, Mod, Demix, DPO, Optimix, Echophon, Herbverb, Tempi, Wogglebug, Pressure Points, Rene Mark II, Morphogene, and the bus strip. So Mimeophones for the tape and microsound thing.
And the Tempe's been discontinued.
Has it?
No, I'm thinking about the Rosie. Sorry, I do apologise. The Rosie, which is the sort of DJ style.
Oh, yeah.
That has been discontinued. So the Tempe most probably is still popular, because that's a clock.
Gotcha. They are cool. There was one point when I was tempted by the tape and microsound machine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, well, we've synthesized some stuff. And we've Make Noise did some other things. For more synthy goodness, episode 95, we'll have Ian O from the Modular Cafe and Void Null, and we'll reveal this fun project that we've been teasing a bunch. One more synthy thing before we move on. A new release from ALM, Busy Circuits, UK company that we do quite like. Which one did you say you had, Pete?
I've got the Dinky's Taco.
Well, there's a new one, Tyso Daco. A dual 12-bit digital wavetable drum voice with a unique signal path. It sounds like some things. It sounds like this. So, in typical ALM digital voice standards, because there's a few different ones, it's quite strange and very versatile as well. So they've got some kind of demos on their YouTube channel. They've got some ambient stuff, they've got some drum stuff, they've got whatever that was that you just heard, and it seems pretty cool. I know they've definitely got their fans, those ranges of voices, because what have you got? There's Akemi's Castle and Akemi's Taiko.
Akemi's Castle is the big FM.
The big one, yeah, with actual DX7 related chips in it. It's definitely Yamaha chips anyway.
Yeah, it's got the operators. I don't know how many it's got, but
yeah. And then there's Dinky's Taiko. Which one do you have? I've forgotten already.
I've got the Dinky's Taiko.
Dinky, that's the one. How would you describe it? What
is it? It's kind of a drum voicey sort of thing, very percussive, but it can sort of move into making other noises, squeaky
clicky.
But it I think predominantly it's a sort of drum voice of sorts.
I guess it's kind of a different angle to something like Bazimula Ceteritas Alta from Noise Engineering, where it's digital, quite versatile, and is one of those things that rewards a lot of modulation being chucked at it.
Yeah, I think that, well, that's that demo that you played sounded like they were really pushing and pulling that module in all sorts of directions.
There's so a lot of patch cables in this.
Yeah, there's a lot of modulation going on there. I think that was a sample of everything it can do at once. Is that all the one module?
No, it looks like they've used Squid Sample to
complement it.
Exactly, to make a bit of a drum kit out of it. And then how about ambient dual synth voices? Obviously, that's a more full system kind of thing.
So
but
which bit
stuff.
Was the actual module?
Melody.
Okay, it's quite. I like that. It was sort of panpipey.
Yeah, it was pretty nice. Almost like something you might be able to get out of Rings with the resonator input or something.
Yes, I've still yet to try that.
It's good fun. I really liked doing, what's it called? Mutable Instruments Ears, using that contact microphone and kind of hitting it and things like that. It's good fun. Right. Synth-related stuff. I think it's time that I say some words. It's time for a bit of, I guess it's a reprise of a rant that I had a while ago and didn't quite make the cut because it was in the middle of Superbooth stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, you just went for it.
Yeah, and it didn't quite sit. But I've scripted a bit, I've thought, and it's much less miserable than it was last time because I think I'm out the other side.
Cool.
I'm feeling much happier about it, but let me...
You're in recovery.
Let me go. Yeah, so let me begin by describing a confluence of circumstances and the journey, the subsequent journey. Been quite a long time. I went to university to do a music production degree, which in hindsight was probably a big mistake, just in time. Anyway, so through university doing that, I worked in music retail, as you may know. I did the Modular Cafe, and I started to form a bit of an identity, not through any real intention of my own, but I did kind of welcome it. Built up a Eurorack system, I performed with that. I did a synth jam at university. I did a quadraphonic performance with probably the height of that system as my kind of final project. And I did the modular videos at work, and I sort of became that modular guy, in inverted commas, in friendship groups and throughout the it was quite a small music uni, but people knew there was some weird modular guy who made some strange bleeps and did workshops and stuff. And it kind of wrapped itself into my identity, but sort of how I viewed myself. You know, if somebody asks, oh, what do you do? And I say, oh, I do weird, strange modular stuff. Take a look at my YouTube channel. You know, I do that kind of thing. I've said to quite a few people now, with my hindsight as 2020 glasses on, that I don't ever want to pursue education or a career in a hobby. I've definitely said that to you, Pete.
It's, yes, many times.
It hasn't gone well for me. It could probably work for other people, but not for me at all.
I think anything that you convert into something that you're trying to rely on for income can taint it very badly.
Yeah, it definitely did here. And I'm absolutely not going to complain about the experiences I've had through that and the people I've met, especially the people I've met, most importantly. But yeah, through A-levels, degree, job in music production and synthesizer-related things, it's 7 years has drawn all the passion that was once there.
You're sapped, you're tapped out.
It's all gone. Just looking back to 13-year-old me, sort of asking my guitar teacher who did sort of the music production stuff at the school, said, hey, can you teach me how to record myself? That's when it all started. And none of that's left. That Ben's gone. Long gone.
Well, you're going to be a different person.
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of how it goes, you know? You grow, you learn. But yeah, I've been sitting, I suppose it's the last maybe 2 years, year and a half, something like that. And there was a sense that I was quite trapped. I was working in a music store. I'm on this podcast talking about synths, running the ModCaf with a bunch of the other people. I ended up feeling quite guilty that I actually had no interest in any of this stuff. Maybe it's a little bit imposter syndrome-y and had all of this money tied up in, well, a lot of money tied up in the Eurorack stuff. And sort of the living situation wasn't conducive to being able to safely and sustainably fund a modular addiction either. So all of that's, you know, weighing on my mind for quite a while and festering nastily. And then I sold it all quite recently. And last week I sold the Plinky. That's gone. All that's left is my two Bastille castles, if I ever need them. I don't want to keep it as a bit of a miserable dirge, but I have managed to turn the corner, and I will explain how and why, because I think there's got to be somebody else who's been in a similar situation to this. Maybe not directly synthesizer-related, but I can imagine that happening to somebody. Well, it could easily have happened to me if I'd got into cycling before synthesizers, watched the Sigma Sports YouTube channel, and then gone to work at Sigma Sports. Right now, I would probably not be riding bikes.
It would have been totally ruined for you.
Exactly the same thing would have happened. But yeah, I mean, talking to you, Pete, talking to Kira, Anthony, a bunch of other people from the ModCaf, I've kind of tried to shift my perspective a little bit. I mean, I really enjoyed the ModCaf as a spectator, really. I was just there to maybe help it run a little bit, but mostly I was just absorbing the fun and it was just hanging out with friends rather than, I didn't feel any of the pressure to bring equipment or to get into the jam or something. So I don't know if it's just for me, but I'm glad that the ModCaf does support that angle a little bit better. But thinking about that, I can still do ModCaf things and not feel weird, which is great, though I do still need to get into that backlog of audio editing, as I keep mentioning over the last 3 weeks. See, I keep saying it because then maybe I'll get round to it. But I have been able to shift my thoughts and feelings about synthesizers into a corner that we've spoken about a bunch before. That's, I can look at them through the satisfying object that's somewhat artisanal and definitely well made, but we can't quite articulate why it's so pleasing lens. You know that one.
Yep.
I can think about them in that sense. You've mentioned before that there is something just about owning them, especially if you're talking about a modular. It looks brilliant, like old lab equipment kind of thing. I mean, there's nothing wrong with just appreciating the tactility and the utility of them from afar for a while. And I could potentially, in the future, maybe enjoy synthesizers from the kind of angle that our customers would have done, you know, when they're not surrounded by them all the time. So there's a bit more excitement from their rarity and novelty, you know, because you're not seeing them every day. So that could lead to more enjoyment, the ModCaf and things. So I'll focus on my other hobbies like coffee and cycling. And, you know, maybe one day I'll get back into making music. I mean, in my audio drawer, I've got my Bastille castles if I need them, but I'm feeling much less stressed about the whole thing. And with this new project that's coming up round the corner, you know, I'm feeling good about it. There's no pressure anymore.
Yes.
I'm free.
I escaped somehow. I totally understand. There's several factors there. One, we've said this many times, but for sure, working in music retail is a complete buzzkill in respect to creativity.
Yeah.
Quite often, and I've commented to fellow staff members or even customers on occasions, you're there all day. When you get home, and this has happened to me several times, I go into the studio and then just turn tail because I can't stand looking at it anymore because I've been surrounded by it all day at work. So that is one element that's for sure. There's also a certain responsibility if you own the stuff because it's not inexpensive, especially the more you own, the responsibility builds. And I can understand why that would build a sense of almost anxiety even, especially if it's not being utilized at all. I have occasions where I haven't touched the equipment for weeks through various circumstances, and that builds up that stress and anxiety because you think, I've got all this stuff, but why? What's the point? I mean, it is nice owning it, but if you're not using it and you're not enjoying it, it was just going to feed into that anxiety.
Totally. I think it was just poor timing of the education and work environment depleting the enthusiasm to the point where I had all the stuff, the enthusiasm had gone, and like you say, it was the guilt and the anxiety kind of bubbled up. And after selling it, I think I've only just managed to get over the weird feeling of being at the ModCaf and on this podcast and not owning anything.
That's not a problem. I mean, it's good that the actual anxiety is dispersed or melted away. You can sort of have a more chilled perspective on everything. But I've been there several times. I mean, I've built up quite a lot of equipment, and then circumstances have forced me to get rid of some of it or just pack it away. You know, life changes. You're at the other end of your life than I am. In respect that you've got other prominent concerns. You've got to think about your income, your accommodation, your plans for the future, you know, whatever they may be, your career, etc., etc. Even for myself at the other end where I'm sort of heading towards retirement, and the idea was in respect to buying lots of equipment was that I'm at a stage where my family have grown up and flown the nest. Well, I'd like to say they've flown the nest. They're still here, but they're effectively independent adults. Mm. And I thought, well, I'm just going to have what I want whenever I want, a sort of me time, me possessions, so to speak. But even that, and I've said this quite often, and it feeds into our gas conversations. I go in there and think, why have I done this? If I'm not using it, I'm just racked with guilt because it just seems such a waste. This stuff's there. I mean, it's not too bad with modular in the respect that you can resell it and recoup a good
proportion. It's always been good for that.
Yeah, you could. It's not hard to recoup a good percentage of the funds that you've outlaid. But I totally understand your sentiment and where you're coming from with all that.
I do wonder if the internet has affected it in certain ways as well. I know I wouldn't have discovered modular if it were not for YouTube or synthesizers at all if I had not been slightly addicted to YouTube. But I think one thing that's definitely an issue when somebody is coming across one of these, I don't want to use the word influencer, I hate that, one of these people with prominent YouTube channels. I mean, take for example Andrew Huang. You see that monstrous case in the background and you can't help but lust after so many. And it's not particularly in these cases when they're gifted so much stuff from manufacturers so they can amass modules quite quickly at absolutely zero expense to themselves. But you lose out on the slower process of accumulating these things. It's same with bikes, same with coffee. You could turn up on somebody's YouTube channel and they've got $5,000 worth of coffee gear or, you know, $10,000 worth of bike stuff, which they've actually been accumulating for 10, 20, 30 years. You think, oh, but now I want $10,000 worth of bike stuff. Credit cards, there's some dangerous mindsets could be created through it. I think a little bit of that might have seeped into my worryingly quick descent into the modular world.
That's why they're described as influencers.
Yeah, it works, unfortunately.
I would be surprised if quite a few of those guys have crisis of conscience and they're relying on it for their income because a lot of them have got quite a lot of followers.
Yep.
And
the pressure to consistently make videos as well.
That's exactly.
No small weight on the mind.
They might be having all sorts of thoughts going, I can't stand any of this. I really hate it. I mean, I just think you go through these phases. I do believe that because of your appreciation of the equipment and your knowledge of it, that you will come back slowly round to it, or you know, there will be a time where you may start accumulating or buying the odd thing in again. I just think this is par for the course. It's the natural sort of way things go. You could always describe it as that you've got the 7-year itch.
I haven't heard that one. What's the 7-year itch?
It's a sort of thing that's attributed to relationships,
right?
You know, they go through a sort of cycle, and 7 years is the sort of potentially the natural cycle that you're kind of going to get past, because you go through the initial phase of infatuation and the whole arc of a relationship.
That they say it's about 7 years.
Seven years. Which may have some sort of biological underpinning whereby that's enough time to reprocreate.
Who knows?
A number of times.
Well, maybe when I'm 35, Modular might come back into my life. We'll see how it goes.
Don't necessarily think it'll be that long. But as you say, you know, your involvement with the Modular Calf, there's no actual requirement to own it. I mean, if you get stimulus from the organisation of the running and the setting up for others, you can enjoy it without having the responsibility, commitment or the anxiety that may follow by actually owning any of the stuff.
That wouldn't be bad. Yeah, there's been some pretty interesting rumblings, which I'll tell you about later on the ModCaf front. But anyway, we've rambled, we've synthesized. Why can't I say synthesed? Because it's not a word, that's why I can't say it. Either way, we've done some stuff, we've said some things, and I actually missed out a bit of a weekly update, which I will dive into now, if I may. It's coffee related again. I haven't spoken about coffee for a small amount of time. There is a frustration at the moment. That is that we've got a coffee on the go at the moment, which is from Kiss the Hippo in Richmond, quite a nice one. And we've had it before, 4 or 5 months ago, maybe. And this was actually when we were in the Lake District. We brewed it up, and it was really great. It had a really lemony tea-like something going on. It was absolutely delicious. And we've got the same coffee now. We just can't get back to that flavour at all. It's really annoying. And thinking about it and talking to people, I went to Kiss the Hippo and I was talking to them while I was there. It could be that the issue is water. If you've ever been to either the Lake District or to some extent Cornwall, you'll know that the tap water is delicious. Are you a fan of that kind of thing? There's a really soft water.
I am aware of the taste. I do tend to prefer mineral water over tap water. And I'm certainly aware that the water can change quite dramatically regionally.
Yeah, the Lake District has always been the place for really tasty tap water. Now I'm sounding like I'm a bit of a water snob, which isn't far from the truth, because my favourite mineral water is Isklar, if you're asking. But the question is now, what water do we brew coffee with? And so it's gone from being really nerdy about, oh, you just want to get some good coffee. Oh, wait, but now I've got a really expensive grinder and a temperature-controlled kettle and all the various drip brewers. Now I'm worrying about, do I buy a setup for distilling my own water and adding my own minerals to it?
That really is getting to a super low level of detail.
Yeah. The solution may be, I've approached a couple of local-ish cafes with the request, hey, can I buy some of your treated water? Because the top cafes will do that, and it's actually a requirement for some of them to serve certain roasters that they have a proper stringent water processing situation. It could be a lot of filtration, it could be a full distillation or deionization and re-addition of minerals later before it goes into espresso machines and brews and things. We'll see. I really don't want to buy bottled water just to make coffee with it. It's just so wasteful.
Over the top.
Yeah, because one option is to buy distilled water and add third wave water packets, which is a solution. Well, it's not a solution, it's a powder with all the minerals to make, in inverted commas, perfect brewing water. Speaking of being a coffee snob, my partner and I have revitalized our coffee Instagram. Yeah, it's gone that far. It's going to happen. Partly as a bit of a diary, because it's been an issue where we've had one amazing coffee that one time, we couldn't remember what it was, so we couldn't find it to buy it again. And also as a record of how we're brewing things to be more consistent. Because what's happened is, we've had so many amazing coffees from the likes of Canopy and Guildford, Kiss the Hippo and Richmond, Watch House, I think, in London. Now our standards are so high that we get disappointed by our own coffee that we make at home. So there needs to be an upgrade.
You need to up your game.
Exactly. And thankfully, that's quite an enjoyable process, because I didn't take a coffee job. Well, I did for one day, but it didn't last, so it's fine.
Yeah, so that, as you say, that could have done the same for your coffee enjoyment as working in music retail did for your synth enjoyment.
And I'm glad COVID polished that job off after one shift. The cafe's still going, don't worry. But there we are. There's some coffee a brewing. terrible jokes. Have we got anything more before we head into our multimedia?
No, there's very little news. It was all rinsed out through Superbooth.
Yeah, all the manufacturers are waiting now for either just whenever they want to release something or...
NAMM 2022.
Well, it's not a million miles away because it's January, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. We'll see how we go. But for now, miscellaneous multimedia time, as always. Pete, I think you've got something ready. I don't, so I'm going to...
You're going to have a little shufti while...
Oh, yes.
Well, after your quite deep mea culpa, if you can describe it in that way, about synths and, or your relationship with synthesizers.
Yeah, that's what it is. Relationship with. I'll take that.
I've got a YouTube channel which I dip in and out of, but it is a bit heavy.
Heavy stuff, okay.
Heavy stuff. It's based or it shows extracts from a program that's a long-running program on PBS. We don't get PBS in the UK.
No, it's an American thing, isn't it? It's public broadcast something. It's like funded by tax dollars.
Sort of like their BBC.
I think so, but it seems to be kind of anybody can make and submit programs. I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, this program is called Closer to the Truth, described as a definitive source for cosmos... consciousness and meaning.
Yeah, that's not light.
Closer to the Truth features leading philosophers and scientists exploring humanity's deepest questions. Basically, it's been going since 2000, so 21 years. And on the YouTube channel, I think they've got something like 4,000 clips.
Is it just Closer to the Truth on on YouTube?
Yes, that's the title of the YouTube channel. And basically, the gentleman who hosts it, who is also the creative executive producer and writer and presenter... is going around to all these various learned people and ask them very deep questions like, why and how? Literally, that is it, you know. What is consciousness? What is the universe? Why are we here? And you're getting all the different angles. So I wouldn't say there's a general consensus between the sort of philosophical side of things, more scientific side of things. I mean, it's just all sorts of various slants. There's no particular bias that I can tell, and you can take away... what you want. One I watched recently was a gentleman who is a leading theoretical quantum physicist, and he was describing how you could actually say the universe is a computer in the terms of how it works at quantum physics, and he compared it with the workings of a computer. And when he did it, it was like a kind of like for like or an A-B kind of comparison, and it did lead you to the conclusion that you could, in some respects, describe the whole universe as a computer or functioning like a computer at the very lowest levels. But it's that type of thing anyway. So if that's the sort of thing that you like and it doesn't give you the space vertigo or whatever you want to call it.
I forgot. That was a brilliant phrase. I think... I just looked at skimming through some of the titles there. It's going to be space vertigo, but it's also going to be...
existential crisis of...
Yeah, well, existential vertigo then. Yeah, absolutely. But enlightening in some ways, I hope, as well. I'm going to dig into that this evening, actually. It looks pretty great.
So that's my multimedia recommendation for this week. The YouTube channel, Closer to the Truth.
Lovely stuff. It does seem heavy stuff. Heavy stuff.
Yeah, very heavy.
On a slightly less heavy note for my one, we definitely recommended the channel. I think actually Telmo might have recommended this one. It's a channel called Never Too Small. It's an architectural channel, I think based in Australia somewhere, probably Melbourne. They also do some bits in Asia, but they've kicked off a new series, which is called Reimagining Small Living. So it's a bit of a departure from the architectural side of things and moves more into the lifestyle, slightly minimalist movement, efficiencies, ecological, climate-related stuff. Slightly more interviewee format. But it's really cool. They've only got one episode of that so far. You've got to go find it out. So it's going to be another recommendation for Never Too Small on YouTube. That brings us to the end. I'm going to plug it one more time. Ian O from Void Null is coming on the podcast next week. Do not miss it, or I will find you. But thank you for listening. Farewell.